Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So today is obviously a very special day. We have our Jhulan Yatra Swing Festival that's commencing today, and will go on till Monday, which will then obviously be followed by the appearance day of Lord Balaram Jayanti. And today's also a special day. It is the ladies' graduation ceremony for the residential course. So wonderful, quite an eventful day today. So for today's session, we're going to read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, The Opulence of the Absolute, verse 10. So I'll recite the Sanskrit and the English, and then recite the purport. Te samsatata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. So I'll read the English. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. I'll repeat that. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that He had spoken to him of many things and that He would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Now buddhi yoga is explained. Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this, therefore the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he's acting in Jnana Yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he's acting in Bhakti Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But if he's still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that person always engages himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion renders all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to Him. Desam satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is a very interesting verse, and it's the reason one chose this verse for today is because one knows from the scriptures that the ultimate goal is to give love and be loved. As one of our great saints, Rupa Goswami, mentioned, that is the essential function of the soul, ultimately who we are. And this is what everyone is looking for in this world, how to actually give love and be loved. And therefore, this swing festival that's starting today, the Jhulan Yatra, is actually a wonderful expression, a wonderful opportunity for us to express that love to Krishna, to connect with Krishna, and ultimately to express that love towards each other as well. Now, before I get to the swing festival, I know obviously we've got about 10 minutes, so we'll do it in a summarized version. But to look at the swing festival, obviously there's a few things that we need to get in place first, that obviously it's an expression of love which we manifest through our activities with the deities. Okay. Now, deity worship is an interesting thing. It's one of those concepts which is not prevailing in all the spiritual traditions nowadays. But it's very much integral to our Krishna conscious tradition. Now, on one side, when one looks at deity worship, one can argue that, what's the need for deities? What's the point of deities? Like, is like a statue or an idol. Like, you know, why am I actually, like, you know, looking in front of some idol and then trying to worship the deities? It doesn't make any sense. So you look at, if you look at spiritual thoughts, on one side, people may argue that, you know, the supreme consciousness, we can call God, or in our case, Krishna, is everywhere, is unlimited. So therefore, there doesn't need to be a form. There doesn't need to be these limitations where we actually focus on a deity. On the other side, some people say, well, actually, no, we all have forms. So therefore, if, you know, animals have forms, humans have forms. So if that be the case, then why shouldn't the supreme also have a form as well? So there are two arguments here. One being that Krishna, the supreme consciousness, is transcendent, meaning that he transcends, he exists beyond matter, right? There's no need for forms. Or the other side is that he's present within matter, okay? He's within everything, okay? So there's always this kind of dichotomy going on, okay? But obviously from our scriptures, we understand that actually you can reconcile both. Yes, he is beyond matter, but he's also, if Krishna is omnipotent, omniscient, then he can surely manifest himself through matter as well. Because if one is saying that one Krishna cannot manifest through matter, then are we not limiting Krishna? If Krishna is omnipotent, then he has the power to do what he likes. That means he can be beyond matter, but if he needs to manifest through matter, then he can do that. One can then also argue that, if we take that kind of argument a bit further, one can say that, but then what's the point of worshipping deities? If Krishna is everywhere, if the supreme consciousness is pervading everything in this world, all the elements, then why not just worship the rocks, the hills, the rivers, right? We have pantheistic traditions where they worship the elements, nature worship, right? So there's a good point made for that. The idea that, yes, everything is ultimately coming from Krishna and Krishna's pervading, but the deities are a way for us to focus that love in a very personal way. Yes, one can worship the nature, and yes, one should actually worship nature and respect Mother Earth. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki. Yes, deities have been looking very, very beautiful today. So, yeah, one can argue that, you know, why don't we just worship the hills, the rocks, things like that. But the understanding is this, is that we are personal beings, okay? Every human being is craving relationship, whether they know it or not. We're all looking for love. And love generally means relationship. There has to be some level of intimacy. So we can worship the world as a whole as being a manifestation of the supreme consciousness. But if there's an opportunity to personalize that relationship in a more kind of condensed, loving form, then that's obviously what we're trying to achieve through this. And the deities are not just sculptures that are made from, like, you know, just materials like brass or metal or wood or whatever. They're actually, they've got potency in them. They've got spiritual potency. In fact, when we even install deities, we actually take them through a ceremony. Do you even know what the ceremony is called? Right, it's called the Pran Pratishtha ceremony. So basically invoking certain sacred sound vibrations to invoke the kind of like the Lord's potency, Krishna's potency to actually, you know, be imbibed in these deities. Even when the deities are sculpted, they're sculpted according to certain spiritual rules and regulations. So it's not, there's a difference between having deities and having a normal sculpture that you see in front of a fountain or something, right? There's an extra level of potency there. It's almost like, if you want to give an example, like a modern example, just like you have a 50-pound note, right, which is just basically a piece of plastic paper, right? Like, well, now it's plastic. It used to be like, I don't know, cotton or tree, right? Before they used to be made from different materials, right? But you got like a piece of plastic paper, which is 50-pound note. And let's say I've got another, just a piece of plastic of the same measurements. Let's say, Ian, I give it to you. I say, Ian, you know what? This 50-pound note, I'll keep this, but I'll give you something of the same size, same material to you. Would you accept it? And say, you can use that as 50 pounds. No, you wouldn't. Why not? Right, it's got value to it. It's got value to it. It's authorized. Similarly, when we look at these deities, they're not the same as any sculpture that you see. They've got value to it. That value has been given, authorized by the Pran Pratishtha ceremony, by the worship that we're doing, by the, you know, the kind of sacred rites that we're doing, that is giving that extra potency. Just like the 50-pound note has been given potency by the Bank of England, that I'm not going to accept any piece of plastic of that dimensions. It has to be the £50 note issued by the Bank of England, you know, by Her Majesty's grace, right? So like that. So the deities are also have a certain element to them. So there are ways of us to actually communicate, to actually develop that relationship with Krishna. So then let's then bring that. So that's the kind of basis behind why we worship the deities, why we kind of connect with the deities. And they're a way for us to personalize a relationship. And that means just like when you love someone, you want to take care of them, you want to feed them, you want to look after them, you want to, you know, especially if you have a child or something, you want to bathe them and clean them and all that kind of stuff, all these kind of different things. So the deity worship is giving us a holistic sensory experience of God, of Krishna consciousness, of spirituality, right? Through the eyes, we can see Krishna in a manifested form. Through the nose, we're smelling the flowers and the fragrances that are offered to Krishna. With the tongue, we taste the food that is offered to Krishna, which we'll be having shortly. I'm sure we're all looking forward to that, right? With the ears, we're hearing the glories of Krishna. Today, in this morning, you know, we've heard a lot of glories and, you know, hymns being sung in honor of Krishna. All glories to Krishna and Radha on the swing and all these kind of wonderful, glorifications. Through touch, we actually, obviously, especially when you're actually on the altar doing the conducting deity worship as His Grace Paramakaruna Prabhu is doing right now. So through that, we're actually getting to touch and feel Krishna as well. So it's a way for us, all the senses that would engage in our normal loving relationship, we're also using that to engage in Krishna's worship as well. So that mood is always there to actually worship. Even in the modern times, you see people, you know, when they love someone, especially you see fans, right? You know, when they have like, might construct an altar at home, right? I remember when I was growing up, we used to really be into Michael Jackson, right? And I know a lot of my friends would have like Michael Jackson posters and then have like Michael Jackson memorabilia, and they would love Michael Jackson, like completely, you know? And then there are obviously those diehard fans that would actually then collect like paraphernalia of Michael Jackson's, right? Like his glove or like his, you know, like some clothes that he had or whatever, right? Or like footballers, right? So we have our modern day heroes. And actually, if you think about it, what we're doing is we're using those tendencies to worship, to love, but sublimating it onto some celebrity or some famous personality that we really love and, you know, want to like, you know, connect with. So what we're doing is we're trying to connect with the supreme consciousness and use those loving feelings, the sense of like, you know, connection to Krishna. Now, of course, bringing it back to the swing festival, Krishna is never alone. And just like in this world, you've got the masculine and feminine. So therefore, with Krishna, we also have Radha. So you can see on the left-hand side, we've got there Krishna with the flute in his hand. And next to him, you've got the beautiful lady. That's Radha. So basically, in modern terms, Radha is basically Krishna's girlfriend, right? So just like you have yin and yang, you've got the masculine and feminine principles. It's the same way, God is never just male. God is male and female put together. Okay, he's got the male aspect to him and the female aspect to him. So it's said that in our Vaishnava calendar in the Krishna conscious tradition, we are now embarking on the season called the monsoon season. It's a hot, humid, but very wet season. Okay, and so in this time, this is a very auspicious time of the year where we actually get to lovingly serve Krishna. Just that when we love someone, we want to treat them nicely. And during this time, we want to keep them nice and cool. So we construct beautiful swings for Krishna, garlanded with flowers, decked with beautiful pillows and everything like that. And we actually seat Krishna and Krishna's girlfriend, Radha, onto the seat. And we swing them and we give them all sorts of wonderful sweets and all sorts of, you know, like sort of different sort of wonderful, like luxurious treatments to make them feel good. It's our way of expressing our love for Krishna. And I guess one of the really special things about the swing festival is the fact that it's not just generally you find, especially in the temples, that the deities are there on the altar, and it's only the priests like Paramakaruna Prabhu that would obviously get to do these special luxurious treatments for Krishna. And obviously we benefit from obviously, you know, watching it and witnessing it and things like that. But from this special day till Monday, all of us, whether we're Krishna conscious practitioners, visitors, guests, or whether even if we're priests or not priests, it doesn't matter. Everyone gets the opportunity to experience that kind of like direct reciprocation with Krishna by getting to take part in swinging Krishna and Radha's swing. and actually, like, you know, offering different things to Krishna, food and candles and, you know, flowers and all these kind of wonderful things. So let us try and, you know, meditate on the beautiful opportunity we have to experience that love with Krishna. And, you know, these kind of physical activities, they really help to kind of complement our main activity, which is, of course, by connecting with Krishna through the sacred sound vibration, which, of course, is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this sound vibration is like almost like a direct phone call to Krishna. As we do it each day, we'll find that our consciousness starts to get elevated. We may not see the effect straight away, but as we do it bit by bit, we'll see our consciousness gets elevated. Along with that, we can engage our physical pursuits in Krishna's service. Through that, we'll see how our life changes, not just on a spiritual level, but on a material level as well. Okay, so I'll finish there. It's 8:25.